Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Vaccinations and Your Rights in the U.S., a show co-hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brook and attorney at law Alan Phillips. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts and questions. Let's go!
Welcome. You're listening to Back to Your Rights in the U.S. Back to Your Rights attorney Alan Phillips, and joining me in just a little while, my co-host, founder of Homeopathy World Community, Debbie Brook, coming to you live every Thursday afternoon at 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Central, 11 a.m. Mountain, and 10 a.m. Pacific times. We are simulcasting. You're listening to us. If you're listening to us live, you're listening to us live on Freedomizer Radio or at Homeopathy World Community Radio. And we welcome you wherever you're listening to us. And lots to talk about today, as always. Tons of things going on in the vaccine world. I wanted to start out this first segment of the show by talking about a question I got from somebody in New Jersey just in the last day or so. And this person informed me, I had not heard about this prior to the email just earlier this week, that all the healthcare personnel in the state of New York are now required to get an annual flu shot or wear a mask during flu season. Now, I presume this is something coming from the health department or the state legislature, and I'm not entirely clear on that. But, and probably the health department, we just had something similar here in North Carolina where all of the state healthcare workers, something on the order of around 10,000 healthcare professionals that work for the state, all have to get a flu vaccine. And they allow here in North Carolina medical and religious exemptions. But disturbingly, I guess I can't really say surprisingly, because this is what I've seen in terms of hospital policy all over the country, but the state policy now here in North Carolina violates federal law, the federal First Amendment and federal civil rights law, because they are overly restrictive in what they are allowing in their written policy for religious exemptions. And I can't express how disturbing is when I see state after state around the country passing policy, enacting, passing laws, enacting policy, including, and this is also true with Obamacare, the way Obamacare has defined religion in terms of religious exemptions to Obamacare requirements, where these people are just ignoring years and decades of legal precedent from the courts in a variety of different arenas looking at religious freedom under the Constitution. And clearly, you cannot lawfully, the state cannot lawfully restrict that, state or federal government, restrict religious freedom to members of organized religions. This is not some rare, obscure point hidden deep in the law that you have to dig around for hours and hours and hours to, you know, maybe find or not. This is throughout decades of federal court cases, state court cases, looking at, for our purposes today, what qualifies for a vaccine religious exemption, but religious freedom anywhere. Under federal civil rights law, for example, where employers have to accommodate their employees' religious beliefs and practices that might pertain to or relate to a religious objection to vaccines, but it can be any religious belief or practice, and employers are not permitted under federal civil rights law to restrict that to people who are members of foreign organized religion. In fact, under the federal civil rights law, there's even a narrow category of beliefs you could hold as an atheist that are protected religious beliefs. Now, I know that sounds rather strange to a lot of people, but let me go ahead and I don't have this committed to memory verbatim, but I've got the essence of it committed to memory, and I'll explain it to you. If you have sincerely held moral or ethical beliefs, or a belief, having to do with what's right and wrong in some sort of fundamental sense, and you hold this belief with the same strength as as traditional religious beliefs are held by their holders, and if these beliefs go to what the law calls and what the Supreme Court has referred to as ultimate concerns, such as issues concerning life, purpose, and death, that can potentially be a protected religious belief. And there was a real interesting court case last December. Federal court was looking at this issue with regard to a nurse who opposed the flu vaccine because she was a vegan. And somewhere early on in the case, I imagine probably the hospital filed a motion to dismiss and asked the court to look at this. And they were not deciding whether or not the woman got the exemption at the hospital. This was a preliminary question only. They were deciding, in effect, whether or not the case went forward. The hospital is trying to get the case thrown out early on, which is something that is common when people file lawsuits. Often the defendants who are being sued will argue any of a number of potential grounds on which they say the case should be thrown out so that they can all get on with their lives and not even have to go through the whole process of a lawsuit. So it's a common practice or strategy by defendants. But the question here before the court was simply whether or not it's possible for being a vegan to be a religious belief under the definition of religion for federal civil rights law. And the court looked at this language that I was just talking to you about, moral and ethical belief about what is right and wrong, held with the same strength as traditional religious views, going to ultimate concerns about life, purpose, and death. And the court said, I think very reasonably and correctly or appropriately, that we cannot categorically rule out vegan beliefs and say that that's not a religious belief under Title VII. Now, again, the court did not say whether or not this specific individual's beliefs qualified or not, because they weren't looking at that question. They were looking at a broader preliminary question. Does the case go forward? Can you say categorically that being a vegan is not going to qualify ever for religious, as a religious belief under the federal civil rights law? And the court said, no, we can't say that, because based on that language, it is possible for someone who is a vegan, for those vegan beliefs to be a moral or ethical belief held with the same strength as traditional religious views about right and wrong and going to these ultimate concerns of life, purpose, and death. So the case went forward. I don't know how the case turned out, but it was really interesting what it tells us. You know, you could be a vegan, you could also be an atheist and be a vegan. But if your beliefs about being a vegan meet the definition there in the law, then that could be a protected religious belief. So it's really, really broad. So it's really, really disgusting to me, or frustrating, when I see my own state health department define what qualifies for a religious exemption in more restrictive terms than what the federal law requires. And in this particular instance, the federal civil rights law does apply. It applies to public and private employers both. So the state, which is a lower legal authority than the federal government or federal law, cannot make up its own exemption criteria unless it's less restrictive than what the federal law requires. But they can't be more restrictive. And yet, the state of North Carolina has done that. I'm seeing hospitals around the country doing that, although lawfully they can't. And so it's very, very disconcerting. But back to the original point, I sort of got away from my original point, which is that healthcare workers in the state of New York now have to get an annual flu shot or wear a mask during flu season. And the question from this person says, does this nullify the policies at New York hospitals that mandate flu shots as a condition of employment? What happens when the companies have their own individual company policy, which is mostly what's going on in hospitals around the country, although there are at least a couple of states and that have state laws mandating flu vaccines for healthcare workers, and there are some bills out there that if they get passed will add more states to that list. And so how does a law affect the company policy? And here's my general answer to this. I'm not going to offer this as legal advice for New York or people in New York. But generally what goes on, I think, is this, that if a company has a policy mandating flu vaccines or you lose your job, and then the state says all healthcare workers have to get an annual flu shot or wear a mask, I don't think that changes the company policy or prevents individual hospitals from having their own more restrictive policies. I think what the state law does in that case, or the state mandate, is it creates a floor, not a ceiling, but a floor. That if the state says you have to get an annual flu shot, I don't think any hospital can say, well, we disagree with that and our people don't have to get a flu shot. If the state says you have to get a flu shot, then, you know, or wear a mask, then you have to get a flu shot. Now, I want to be real clear, though, that when there's a state law mandating flu vaccines for healthcare workers, and if the state law does not provide an exemption, that does not mean that you don't have a legal right to refuse. It just means your legal right doesn't come from the state. But the federal civil rights law does provide healthcare workers throughout the country a right to refuse vaccines on religious grounds. And what qualifies as a general starting place is very, very broad. As I was just saying, you can even, if you fit the right criteria, you can even be an atheist and have protected religious beliefs. It is very tricky, though, the question or issue about what specific beliefs qualify. But as to who can potentially qualify as a starting place, literally anybody. And as that question pertains to vaccine religious exemptions generally, meaning in the military, in school, with immigration, etc. As a general rule starting place, I tell people anybody who's not an atheist can potentially qualify. It's really that broad. But in the civil rights arena, where here we're talking specifically employer-employee relationship, and as to those employers and employees that are covered by the federal civil rights law, and that's not literally every employee and every employer. I believe it's something like employers that have more than 15 employees. So it doesn't cover literally every employer and employee, but any mid to large size employer, whether it's a public employer or a private employer, is going to be covered by the federal civil rights law. And again, as a starting place as to who potentially qualifies, who can potentially qualify, very, very broad. So I wanted to next move back to the conversation I started last week, where I was talking about and taking cues from an article I wrote several months ago about the moral and ethical imperative for vaccine philosophical exemptions. In other words, I believe adamantly that not only should we have the right to refuse vaccines without having to explain it in religious or medical terms at all, not that we should not also have the ability to refuse for medical and religious reasons. I believe we should, but I think ultimately we should never have to justify refusing medical treatment that comes from an industry that routinely engages in criminal behavior, as I've talked about over and over on the show. Pharmaceutical industry fines from the government for violating criminal and civil laws commonly range in the millions and even hundreds of millions of dollars. Criminal fines have been as high as $1 billion in two instances. And this is routine practice in the industry. So this is an industry that routinely engages in criminal behavior. Nobody should ever be required to get a product from an industry that routinely engages in criminal behavior, and nobody, separately from that, nobody should ever be required to get a product that comes with a risk of injury and death. Federal government pays out an average of about $100 million a year to vaccine injured people or their families or the families of people who have been killed by vaccines. And CDC and FDA have told us only 1 to 10% of the adverse events ever even get reported. So we have no idea what the true scope of vaccine injury and death is. But what we do know is enormous. So really, the whole question of philosophical exemptions for me boils down to those two quick sound bites. Comes from an industry that routinely engages in criminal behavior, is a product that can injure and kill you. And the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court, has referred to vaccines, as has federal legislation, as being unavoidably unsafe. Should anybody ever be required to take a product that our own government describes as unavoidably unsafe? We live in a crazy world, folks. We live in a crazy world. But I wanted to go through some other, maybe at least slightly more subtle points. It's interesting that a lot of people in the mainstream view of vaccines says, for example, that unvaccinated people pose a risk of harm to others. See, the reason, ostensibly, that you don't get to decide what goes into your body with a vaccine is because your vaccine protects other people. Herd immunity. So if you don't get a vaccine, you're being selfish, you're putting everybody else at risk, you're just doing it to save money, or you don't want to risk harm, but you're putting others at harm for doing it, and you terrible, awful person for not getting a vaccine. It really doesn't work that way, folks. But let's explore a little bit. First of all, you know, the first thing that many pro-vaccine choice or anti-vaccine people will say on that point is they'll say, well, if your vaccine works, why do you care whether or not I'm vaccinated? And that's an argument that's valid, but, you know, let's be fair, it's really only valid up to a point. Because even the CDC admits that vaccines don't work in everyone. So everybody, here's the theory, everybody has to get vaccinated because some people's vaccines won't work, and some people who can't get a vaccine for medical reasons, those people need the protection from everybody else who gets a vaccine whose vaccine does work. And so if you're not getting a vaccine, then you're just taking away from that group protection of everybody else. Well, all of this rests on this highly questionable theory that's called herd immunity. And we could spend a whole show talking about herd immunity, but I want to give you just a couple of pieces here. There is a long list of peer-reviewed published medical studies documenting outbreaks occurring in vaccinated populations. This has occurred with measles, mumps, smallpox, pertussis, polio, HIV, all the standard childhood infectious diseases. So you got to ask the question, well, do you get herd immunity with vaccines? Because the whole herd immunity theory, according to Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, started by someone's observation that when large portions of a population had already had measles, that it seemed to not be outbreaks. And it has a certain amount of sense. You know, if people are immune, then they're not going to get sick, and theoretically they're not going to spread the disease. But I'm not so sure about that second part. Can you still spread a disease even if you're not getting sick by it? You know, we could look at flu, for example. Everybody says, you know, wash your hands. That'll help prevent the spread of flu. Well, you could be immune from the flu and still touch a doorknob that somebody else who was sick touched and spread germs around. So I'm not sure that being immune, naturally immune, means you can't spread a disease. But let's say that at least in some instances, maybe it does help slow down the spread. So maybe there's some validity to it. But is it also true with vaccines? Well, the research and evidence seems to suggest otherwise. It doesn't seem to work with vaccines. And that's, again, many, many documented medical studies. In fact, there was a study several years ago, that documented a measles outbreak that occurred in a 100% vaccinated population. There was a study that examined this phenomenon, looking at outbreaks of measles in highly vaccinated populations, and including a 100% vaccinated population. And I want to quote from this study. It says, "The apparent paradox is that as measles immunization rates rise to high levels in a population, measles becomes a disease of immunized persons." In other words, attempts to maximize immunization rates might actually be counterproductive. So it really just is not as simple. And then there's a neurosurgeon, Dr. Russell Blaylock, and he has written extensively on many vaccine issues, including the herd immunity hoax. My word for it. I don't know if he's used that word or not. But one of his articles pointed out quite intelligently, frankly, a very large part of the population in the U.S. is what is sometimes loosely referred to as adult baby boomers. Adults who have not been vaccinated for 20, 30, 40 years. And the conventional wisdom tells us that vaccine protection only lasts for a couple years, up to maybe 10 years or so. So all of us baby boomer adults who were last vaccinated in the, 60s or 70s, and haven't been vaccinated for 30 or 40 years, 20, 30, 40 years, we are not protected. We have no vaccine protection. That protection wore off a long time ago. And if not having vaccine protection meant that there would be outbreaks everywhere, that we'd lose that herd immunity protection, we would be having outbreaks all over the place in the adult population over the last 20, 30 years or more. We haven't had that. Hasn't happened. Majority of the U.S. population has no protection from these diseases, and yet we don't see widespread outbreaks. So the decline is obviously due to something else, and this is historically documented, where something on the order of 90 to 95% of infectious disease decline in the 1900s preceded the introduction of vaccines, and many diseases had no vaccine at all, and they declined right along with the rest of them. So vaccines are not the reason that here in the 21st century we don't have widespread childhood infectious disease in the way that we did 75, 85, 95, 100 years ago. The declines were not due to vaccines, it was due to something else. And the absence of vaccination in the adult populations has not led to massive outbreaks from these diseases. So all of this seems perfectly reasonable when you put it together and look at it, and yet we keep being told information inconsistent with all of this. Well, hopefully we can keep sharing information with you on this show and in other ways, and hopefully you'll tune in and educate yourself some here. Folks, you're always welcome to call into the live show to ask your questions or share your information. concerns and beliefs on the subject. If you hear us say something that you disagree with or have a contrary information, feel free to call in and tell us. You never know it all, and God willing, we'll keep learning more and more. But we certainly spend a good deal of time doing the best we can to educate ourselves and to share our understanding of the science and law and vaccines and the policy and so forth with you. There are a number of different areas where, let's say, what do I say here, sort of categories or subcategories, you could say, to exploring the question of whether or not or why should we have the right to a philosophical exemption any place that vaccines are offered. And in effect, with a philosophical, if you say there should be a philosophical exemption anywhere that vaccines are offered, what you're really saying is vaccines should never be truly mandated. And from time to time I hear people say in the alternative vaccine community, oh, vaccines aren't really mandatory because there are exemptions. Well, in some instances, in some situations, yes, anybody can exercise an exemption, but we are not in a place where anybody can exercise an exemption anytime they want to. Not everybody qualifies for an exemption in every situation. And so vaccines are mandated. And some people don't have an option, or not a legal option. So it is a difficult situation. We need to become legislatively active. And the best way to do that is to join the NVIC advocacy portal. It's on the web, nvicadvocacy.org, nvicadvocacy.org. And I think that's a really good website to visit to find out what's going on. There are presently something on the order of 100 or more vaccine bills pending in over 30 different U.S. states. Most of them, if these bills are passed into law by their respective state legislatures, will further dramatically the pro-vaccine agenda by further restricting our rights to make an informed choice. So we need to become active so that we can turn this train around and push it back the other way. But I tell you right now, folks, it is barreling down the tracks full speed, and there are not enough of us working together in any sort of organized fashion to not only stop that train, but we've got to turn it around and roll it the other way. The damage from vaccines is well understood, well documented, if also to a large extent well hidden or denied or suppressed, and people need a right to make an informed choice and to choose other more effective means that are safer and less expensive for that matter. You're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. I'm Vaccine Rights Alan Phillips, talking to you from the Vaccine Rights Studios in beautiful Asheville, North Carolina. Going to go to break here shortly, but we will be back in a few minutes, and hopefully I'll be joined by Homeopathy World Community founder and co-host of this show, Debbie Bruck, and we'll talk to you about some vaccine news going on around the U.S. and around the world. So stay with us. We will be back shortly. Lots more to talk about, and we look forward to having you with us.
Vaccines are required for students, employees, immigrants, military members, and international travel. Do you know how to legally avoid them? This is vaccine rights attorney and Freedomizer radio host Alan Phillips. My vaccine exemption ebook can help you avoid the mistakes that have cost others their exemption rights. Get the authoritative guide to vaccine legal exemptions, an ebook available at freedomizerradio.com and vaccinerights.com.
Let freedom ring throughout the land.
You know the Constitution like the back of your hand. You've read books, listened to podcasts, attended lectures, surfed websites, and watched videos. You've made liberty your life's goal. But something seems to be missing. Stickers from LibertyStickers.com. Exercise your freedom of speech with the world's most dangerous bumper stickers. That's LibertyStickers.com. But wait. There's more. You can buy Liberty stickers wholesale. Get them for 99 cents each when you put 100 or more in your shopping cart in any combination. Sell them or give them away. They're great for gun shows, flea markets, fairs, outreach, and more. Earn extra money, promote freedom, and spread the word. Need custom stickers, labels, or decals for your organization or business? Liberty Stickers makes them. Go to LibertyStickers.com to order or call 877-873-9626. LibertyStickers.com, the world's most dangerous stickers.
Get ready for the epic new documentary adventure ride of your life. Shade, the motion picture. A view into the globalist domain. And Bellas and Burma's film.
Nothing in this world works the way you think it does. Nothing. Governments do not operate the way you think they do. Banks do not do what you think they do. The police department is not here for what you think it is. Nothing in your world works the way you think it does.
We are here to let them know that their world government has been identified, and they thought they just cloned the world economy to bring in a worldwide police state. But instead, it's going to bring them down.
You have to stand up. Speak up. Speak out.
Shade the motion picture. Order your copy of the DVD today at ShadeTheMotionPicture.com.
This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. Warriors, you are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. Read about it in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available now at newsstands everywhere. The Sovereign is a monthly 24-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about life during wartime in the age of Obama. Warriors, keep to date every month. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance, available at newsstands everywhere. This alert is for all you boppers out there in the big city, all you street people with an ear for the action. This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. This is Mercy. Mine will be the last voice you'll ever hear. Don't be alarmed.
Want to spread awareness to your neighbors, family, and friends about what is going on in our country today? It may be things you already know, like the large number of FEMA camps spread around this country to lock up citizens like you and me. What legislators are doing to strip states and people of their sovereign rights. Or legislation giving states the power to force vaccinate under a declared state of emergency. Do your neighbors understand what is going on? William Lewis Films offers the perfect tools to inform our population about this government's tyrannical shift from a constitutional republic to a despotic democracy. Films like 9-1-1 Ripple Effect, Beyond Treason, One Nation Under Siege, Washington You're Fired, Camp FEMA, Enemy of the State, Don't Tread on Me, Blood of Patriots, The Ron Paul Uprising, even 9-1-1 in Plain Sight, William's first production, are all available at WilliamLewisFilms.com. Get your DVDs today at WilliamLewisFilms.com. Educate against the police state.
We are back. You're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips, and joining me now, my wonderful co-host and good friend, Debbie Brock, founder of Homeopathy World Community. Debbie, you with us?
Here I am.
How are
I'm
you
with
today?
You. And you had a great intro today, the first half hour, talking about all kinds of issues that people want to know specifically for their particular situation, whether they are a vegan or an atheist or a believer of another faith, and if that is enough to provide the right for them to have an exemption or waiver. And you talked a lot about herd immunity, and that's a really important issue because that's really the basis of having mandatory vaccines, it seems to me. Put on your calendar September 23rd, Monday, on the Health In Show, Nissan Communications, Kate Birch. She is the supervisor for the Homeopathic Prophylactic Program. Internationally, by the way, she's training homeopaths all around the world so that they can supervise for parents who have their own motivation and initiative to provide these kinds of energy remedies as a boost to the child's immunity growing up. And she's going to be talking about that particular issue, herd immunity. And I know we're going to learn a lot from her. She is a researcher, and the program is under is now getting approved for NIH, National Institute of Health. So it is authentic. It is scientific. It is a data collection process. And I think we're going to really have a great show. That's at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, by the way. I just pulled in a quote from Facebook, and it says, an investment in knowledge always pays the best interest. Ben Franklin. And it's just like, we should have that as a tagline. You really are going to come out on the better end of things when you investigate and get the full picture, get all of the data in, and don't just hear one side of the news. And as a matter of fact, I wanted to say that if anybody's out there listening now, and I don't have my Freedomizer website up because I'm kind of juggling so many pages here, if you're listening right now or on the chat or without even being on the chat, it's most likely because you have been awakened and you have already alternative views from the mainstream. You want to live naturally without drugs or chemicals in your food, in the crops that the farmers are planting, in the environment, in, you know, talking about chemtrails. They talk about everything on Freedomizer Radio. And you've already been awakened. So now this is the time for you to go out and talk to at least one other person and say, you know, I've been listening to this show, and it's really opening my eyes to a new way of seeing the world. And I think it would be important for you to tune in to Freedomizer Radio on the Internet. I mean, you have to tell them, because most people say, where can I tune into this radio show on the dial, you know, on your traditional radio? And you have to explain that there are Internet shows, and you can, these are even podcasts, so you can download them. These are, a lot of people are still not up to speed on how the communications are getting out there. Do you find that's true for you, Alan?
I do, but I think there's somewhat of a generational aspect to it. I consider myself to be fairly electronic savvy with regard to computers and the Internet and so forth, and yet I find that my 11-year-old son can explain things to me about how things work from time to time. And so, it's, of course, it's a generalization, not absolutely not true for everyone, but generally speaking, I think the younger people, because they've grown up with the electronics that you and I didn't have as children, will sometimes be more savvy or have more awareness and or be quicker to learn and adapt to new technologies or evolving technologies. So it's a generalization. But absolutely, when I've had the experience of telling people I do radio shows and they'll ask a question that implies that they are assuming the conventional tower sending out to some area. And
I have the same exact experience with young people, with teenagers.
Oh, really?
Because
okay.
With teenagers, because they're like, maybe they're watching YouTubes a lot, or maybe they're chatting or texting, or they're in chat rooms or Facebook, obviously. But I wouldn't want to make a generalization either, but I don't think that they know about Blog Talk Radio. It seems to be an older generation kind of thing. People in business, I guess church groups now are really on Blog Talk, and celebrities are starting to get on Blog Talk. I think it's starting to be more popular, but still, in terms of age ranges, I don't know that younger people know anything about Blog Talk Radio, to all the people that I have come across.
Well, that would make sense to me now that I think about it and now that you mention it, because the interest in internet radio is going to be in people who have messages to convey, or as from the point of view of listeners, people who have information they want to get, and the younger generation up through young adults are so much more entertainment focused than they are more practical terms. Teenagers are not going to be looking for information about vaccines on the internet, for example, nearly so much
as
new parents or older people who are running into the problem at older ages.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes perfect sense now that you say it.
Right. So the message is, the call to action is, if you're listening at any time to any of the Freedomizer radio shows, we're asking you, go out and tell somebody. Even make little cards and hand them out. It says freedomizerradio.com. And just pull in one more person, and then we're going to increase that the energetic wave of this alternative movement so that we can change the way that the world looks at things. And I'm going to talk a lot about changing the way the world looks at things when it comes to my session about 2:30. Let's get on with some news.
Sure.
Sure,
there was more lots of things. A real interesting article. I thought it was a very curious, if not amusing, title. And this is an article that comes from Care2, C-A-R-E, the digit 2.com. New vaccine takes the fun out of cocaine. So this is really interesting because, Debbie, I throw numbers around a fair amount, and I've mentioned on this show probably several times this year that there was a figure that I saw earlier this year that there were 250 vaccines already waiting for approval, new vaccines already waiting for approval by the FDA, or else they're in clinical trials, so they're approaching, you know, getting to this last step before going to the FDA for approval. And, you know, we think of vaccines traditionally or conventionally, it's about childhood infectious diseases, and I just don't remember ever hearing about 250 childhood diseases or even 250 infectious diseases at all. And so you got to wonder, well, wait a minute, how can there be that many vaccines? What are they talking about doing vaccines for? So this particular article talks about a vaccine that's being researched, that's a vaccine that would be used to help people get over an addiction to cocaine, and the implications here then would potentially extend to addictions for other drugs such as methamphetamine or heroin or nicotine that could work in a similar way. So let me take a minute to explain, if I may, what they are doing that they're calling a vaccine that would have to do with getting over a cocaine addiction.
And is this is this the new heroin drug? Is this the one from tobacco leaves?
No.
Or is it different?
No.
Okay, it's a different one. Okay.
This is a vaccine,
uh-huh,
the purpose of which would be, if it gets to market, it's in development right now, if it gets to market, would be to basically what it does or will do, would do, if it comes to fruition, would be you get injected with this vaccine, and then when you take cocaine after that, you no longer have any of the sensation or experience that you normally get from cocaine, which causes you to become addicted to it, that causes you to keep going back to it, and it can destroy people's lives in terms of their ability to function in the world, but it can also kill you if you overdose or abuse the drug. So the idea of coming up with ways to help people get over their addiction to drugs is certainly a laudable goal, a laudable idea, a valid thing to try to do. As to whether or not a vaccine is the way to do it might be another question. But certainly potentially there's a very positive underlying intent here. But how do you even how would you address addiction, and how could that even happen in a way that you would call something a vaccine? So here's how the vaccine works. there is a drug that's very similar to cocaine called norcocaine that they combine with an inactivated common cold virus. So that when the immune system tries to fight off this virus, it creates antibodies to the virus and to the drug. Then, if somebody who's received the vaccine in the past tries to abuse the drug or they take cocaine, their body attacks the cocaine and destroys it, in theory at least, before it can reach the brain and have any mind-altering effects. So it would be, you know, if you were hungry and you ate food, but you were still hungry, you know, if eating food didn't relieve your hunger, to use a crude analogy, you know, if you took cocaine and you weren't getting the same pleasure sensation or whatever it is you get out of cocaine, that in theory you would stop doing it. It's kind of interesting. They've been experimenting with animals. So the article says results have been promising, so that one study is on its way to human clinical trials. It's not clear, though, how long the effects would last in humans, because it appears, at least in animals, that it's only effective for anywhere from, well, they said it was 13 weeks in mice and 7 weeks in primates. So they say it's possible addicts in recovery would need booster shots every few weeks. Oh, that's just a real shame. I bet they'd hate to have to sell somebody more than one vaccine to solve a problem. But, he said cynically. But an interesting idea.
Is it not the same kind of approach that you would have to allergy sensitivity? You know, how you build up a person's ability to be near a cat or mold by giving them injections so that they are not so sensitive to that substance anymore. Is that the basis behind what you're talking about? This is the cocaine one, right?
Yeah, it sounds different to me because I think the allergy theory or approach with allergies would be something that once you built up that tolerance for an allergen, that you would then be able to be exposed to that in the future without any problems. Mm-hmm. This is something that apparently has a very temporary effect. And because they're attaching it to a virus and they're triggering an immune response to have the immune system. Now, this is sort of interesting because the immune system, the way it's naturally designed, is not going to attack cocaine. So what you're doing is you're modifying the immune system so that it will attack cocaine. And this raises a real huge red flag for me. You know, the immune system, the human body is an immensely complex thing, you know, organism, whatever you want to call it. It's just immensely complex, and it's not a mechanical process. You know, the human body does not break down into a list of component mechanical processes that you put them together and they all add up to a human being. It's much more complex than a purely mechanical process. And yet, allopathic medicine often treats the human body like it is a mechanical device, and let's just break it down into its component parts and pieces and functions and so forth. I mean, you can, to some extent, regard the human body in that way and have perhaps productive results from whatever you're doing, but you're talking about manipulating the body to do something that it doesn't normally do in response to something that doesn't normally occur in nature. And
it's very similar to what I think is the problem with genetically modified organisms in our foods.
I was just having the exact same thought. It's like it's not just as great minds think alike, right? It's not just as simple as, you know, let's break down to some sort of simple mechanical thing here and change it and everything's fine. I mean, there are going to be implications. I mean, how is the human body going to respond to this? It's a non-natural functioning against a non-natural substance being injected directly into the bloodstream. And, of course, I presume that there would, like with other more conventional vaccines, be all kinds of other ingredients
in
there.
Normally, it would not normally be there, and you don't want it to be there, just like injecting small particles of peanut oil or MSG or aluminum or any of those things that are in the vaccines to begin with, not even the diseased or weakened or dead matter, you know, the weakened or dead disease germ or virus, just all of those things, it doesn't belong there. Otherwise, the creator would have had it in there in the first place.
Yeah, well, I'm not closed down myself to the possibility that, in a general sense, that we can hypothetically work with the human body in ways to help it or potentially, I got to be careful where I'm going here. I was going to say potentially improve it. I don't know. I think we have such vast potential in our own, in the natural design, in you know, the way we came in, and you can think of that in both the way we were born sense or the larger sense of where we are in our current state of human evolution. We have vast potential already built in. It goes so far beyond what most people ever actually realize. You know, there are people who have worked with and developed and applied just mind techniques, you know, using the mind, who can speed up their own body's healing by a factor of 10. People who can learn to do all kinds of things, you know, just a sort of somewhat arbitrary examples off the top of my head. Some people can learn to consciously control their heartbeat, speed it up or slow it down. I mean, we have the potential in just exploring our own, the mind and brain we already have, for example, to affect our own health and healing. And, of course, all kinds of other things in terms of diet and so forth, exercise, rest, and all things we can do to control our health. But we have vast potential already built in. And I think it's a much healthier approach to explore what we already have and develop that than it is to try to come at the human system externally to somehow improve on this already incredible design. And the problem, of course, is when you view it mechanistically and you're just going to inject this one thing to get that one response, there's going to be other responses, other things are going to happen, and who knows what it's going to be until you start experimenting with it. And unfortunately, animal studies, while they can give us useful information, there's no substitute for using human beings ultimately and seeing what happens. And so, just like vaccines to a large extent that are already licensed and administered widely, to one degree or another, every vaccine recipient is still participating in a grand experiment to see just how well they work or not and what the adverse effects are or are not. And I'm just really skeptical that something like this would work and not have potentially serious implications or consequences. But I also wonder about it on another level. Now, if you've got somebody who wants to have their ability to get high taken away from them, and if they are psychologically prepared to deal with that, then maybe if this cocaine vaccine works and doesn't have any serious adverse effects, maybe it would be, could be a good thing. But I'm concerned about the possibility, you know, somebody gets arrested for, you know, for using cocaine, and a judge says, you know, I hereby order you to get this vaccine so that you will get off your addiction, and this person could be psychologically traumatized in a very harmful way, for example, in that hypothetical scenario, if they're not in a place psychologically where they can handle. You know, if you ever know anybody who smoked cigarettes and tried more than once to quit, if at the point they failed to quit, you locked them up in a room and gave them all the food they need and their own private bathroom and everything else, but you didn't let them have any more nicotine, that person is going to go through some serious psychological trauma. Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
but it's going to happen no matter what if they try and get off of the drug. I mean, we're calling the nicotine, tobacco, and everything else that's in that smoking that it is a drug that is addictive. And so they're going to, if they try to stop no matter what they do, they're going to go through withdrawal. Unless
right.
you know of a way not to.
Right. So my concern is, would this vaccine potentially be used to force people either unwillingly or inappropriately? Maybe they are naively mm-hmm. willing and don't realize what they're subjecting themselves to. You know, are you going to, along mm-hmm. with that vaccine, you're going to need some other kinds of really potentially care to deal with the person while they are adapting to mm-hmm. a state in which they can no longer get the effects. So I'm concerned on that level. And just real quick, because I want to move on to some other things, but the article mentioned some other ethical questions. You know, would it be ethical
right.
to inject children or teens with a vaccine to prevent them from potentially abusing hard drugs in the future? Would
that's
it be
if you think preventative medicine. That's what they do. That's how
yeah.
they think.
But, of course, mm-hmm. we're assuming, I guess, for purposes of this particular vaccine, you wouldn't do that if you were only going to get protection for a few weeks, you know, unless one of your kids' friends calls you up and says, you know, I'm a friend of your son or your daughter, and they're hanging out with some really bad folks, and they're probably going to be doing cocaine within the next week. You might want to go ahead and get them one of these vaccines, you know. But
it is a good question. And unless, let's say, they came from a family background that had a tendency to get addicted to these types of drugs, would the parents actually want their child to have it as a preventative so they didn't fall into that trap?
Could people who otherwise qualify for government aid, for example, you know, welfare, mm-hmm. Medicaid, what have you, could they be required to get this vaccine? So, in other words, could you be required mm-hmm. to be not addicted in order to qualify for government funding, for example? And I could certainly see the pharmaceutical industry pushing for those kinds of requirements just because it would be more sales for their products. And so all kinds of questions here.
Well, it's a very valid and realistic question, considering that, is it the New Jersey congressman or maybe South Carolina who is asking for the welfare checks to be used only for particular food products that are healthy, not enabling the rest of the population who are on food stamps to purchase whatever will feed their family? In other words, if I go to a store and I have to get something that's healthy and I'm not allowed to choose, I don't know if Cheerios is on the list, but, you know, something that is less expensive and will go further and will stretch the budget and will feed five kids, but because I have to buy only on this allowed list of things, so you can see. You've read about this, have you not?
I have some firsthand experience with what it's like to try to feed a family off of the government aid that's available to poor people. And I can tell you, it is, for most people in that situation, it is a stretch. Even you really don't have, as a practical matter, you don't have the option. If you're on government assistance, you're on food stamps. You don't have, if you've done it the proper way and you're getting a proper amount for your situation, you don't have the option of buying the more expensive things that are organic or mm-hmm. healthier for you, because the money that they give you doesn't really cover the meals and people it needs to cover unless you spread it as thin as you possibly can.
And not only won't it cover it, but the people who are getting the food stamps live in neighborhoods where they don't even have access to those nutritional foods that are going to be on the allowed list. So it's a really complicated issue, but I just wanted to give it to you as a realistic, actual, contemporary example of something that really puts restrictions and limitations on a particular government aid. And as you said, would it be something that unless you get this vaccine, you're not going to get such and such care from the government, let's say this new drug? And I want to make it perfectly clear that this has only been tested in mice, and it has a whole lot more of testing to do in humans, which they're calling, it's worked in the lab for rats and non-human primates. Okay, so it's been for monkeys. Why do they say non-human primates instead of monkeys? Okay, maybe it's an orangutan or something like that. But I mean, they're getting closer to humans, but they may find something goes haywire and it won't even come into the public domain.
Yeah. Well, be sure and stay tuned for our next exciting episode, huh? We'll, if we hear any more about it, we'll certainly bring it on the show and take it further. You know, Debbie, we're actually at another break point here.
Okay.
And so we'll take a short break here. You're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with Homeopathy World Community founder Debbie Brock and vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips. We're going to go to a break here, but we'll be back in a little bit. We've got another hour of vaccine news and homeopathy to talk to you about, folks, so stay with us.
Hi, you're invited to tune in to the Health In Show each Monday on Homeopathy World Community with Debbie Brock, your host, speaking to health experts. We learn about homeopathic energy medicine as a catalyst to boost the immune system and your vital force. Visit homeopathyworldcommunity.com or go to Facebook, Homeopathy World Community.
Hey there, Freedomizers. This is JC from the Sports Lounge. Join us for 3 hours on Saturdays as we take a break from politics to discuss sports at freedomizerradio.com. Come and join us each Saturday from 9 a.m. to noon Pacific, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern.
When tyranny rears its ugly head, will you bow and serve, or will you stand and fight?
Hi, everybody. This is Barack Obama. You get this hunger.
Everybody here wants the pie. We want to grow the pie, and then we want to fight for the pie.
When freedom is threatened, will you turn a blind eye, or will you sound the alarm?
The private sector is doing fine.
Hey, folks, this is The Mouth, host of The Last Voice for Liberty Network. Tune in Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. Pacific, 11 Central, for your ultimate dose of liberty right here on FreedomizerRadio.com.
What can we get done right now?
What?
This is the politics of the moment. This has to do with what can we get done right now?
What?
This is the politics of the moment. This has to do with what can we get done right now?
How's it going, Freedomizers? This is Ferdinand. Join me on the No Bull Zone every Monday night from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We talk about everything from local to national issues, how to be free, and even throw in some health talks. Call in to chat or suggest a topic. That's the No Bull Zone every Monday evening from 8 to 9 p.m. East Coast Time, only on Freedomizer Radio.
It's a race of who could get the right information to a critical mass in time.
If you say you haven't done anything wrong, I mean, that really isn't the issue with it, is it? It's more an issue of you're being spied on. It's an invasion of your privacy.
America is ready for a president that is going to say what he means and mean what he says.
This bill now allows any defense attorney or the person who's the defendant to explain to the jury what a fully informed jury means, what jury nullification is, and say, hey, even though I did it, doesn't mean you have to convict me.
really all we've got to do next year is pick up one more vote and we'll be able to secure the freedoms of Coloradans.
The Panda Report, bringing you hard-hitting interviews from those on the front lines of the battle for liberty. Every Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, on FreedomizerRadio.com.
Hey, Freedomists, join me, Proof Negative, weeknights, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Pacific, as we fight the New World Order together, right here on Freedomizer Radio, your exclusive home of the Proof Negative Show.
We're back, Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. Homeopathy World Community Founder Debbie Brook and Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips.
Are you there? Oh, I think I've clicked on, is there a listener who is wanting to say something? Maybe, maybe not. Okay. That was fun.
I thought maybe we had a call.
It looks like somebody is busy taking care of those kids, and or maybe they were hearing something in the background. You know, whenever you call into these kind of call-in shows, the instructions are basically to step away from your computer because the speaker is going to be broadcasting and you're going to get an echo, or you turn the sound off of your browser. And that way you can hear us and speak with us and it'll be clear. So you can call in if you want to say something to 347-324-3704 or click the little blue Skype button on the Blog Talk Radio website.
Yep.
Okay. Did you want to talk about the blood donations as potentially biohazards?
Boy, that is
from the vaccine with Gardasil.
Yeah, that is a
that's something new.
Yeah, it's an issue. I've seen versions of this come up before in the past, but it's really an interesting and disturbing. Of course, you know, we can say that about most of these vaccine issues, I suppose, but disturbing concern here. Of course, now the Gardasil vaccine, I think far, far above and beyond any of the other vaccines, has just a really high number and percentage of adverse conditions reported. And this has been true with the Gardasil and cervix vaccines around the world. But what this article raises, Debbie, as you may already be aware, is a separate risk, and that has to do with blood donated from individuals who were previously vaccinated with Gardasil, and that this could have some serious consequences. So they're saying, okay, as a starting point, there's something, some problem with the blood of the young women, but of course now they're vaccinating boys and girls with the Gardasil vaccine because we don't want boys getting cervical cancer either. And I can't help myself. I just have to. It seems just so.
Well, they're afraid of oral cancer for boys because they have a link. Supposedly, there's a link between cervical cancer and oral cancer.
Yeah, and the cynical part of me says, no, what they're really worried about is having only half of a market when they can have the whole market, and so let's come up with a rationale that lets us double the market. And I think, honestly, as we've discussed, there are potentially multiple agendas at different levels behind vaccination campaigns generally, other than the surface alleged desire to reduce or eliminate the spread of infectious disease. And probably the most obvious one is the money. Follow the money. Will explain an awful lot of things where science and law doesn't explain it. And that is often, of course, what happens in the vaccine arena. But they found an HPV in a girl's blood 2 years after vaccination. Now, normally the virus shouldn't survive in the bloodstream for that long. And why would the HPV virus be there instead of antibodies? And so there was an independent analysis of Gardasil vaccines, and samples of the vaccines showed that there was genetically modified HPV, the human papillomavirus, DNA, which is a potential biohazard. So they looked at Gardasil from 13 different lots. They were analyzed by an independent lab, and this was contracted by the SaneVax team, an organization that calls itself SaneVax that is supportive, you know, obviously advocates a so-called alternative view on vaccines. They've been particularly focused on the HPV vaccine, I think, at least in recent times. Anyway, they had all these different lot samples analyzed by an independent lab, and they were found to be contaminated with viral HPV DNA residues that were firmly attached to the aluminum adjuvant. So this raises a potential serious question here. Recombinant and genetically engineered DNAs are considered potential biohazards when they're injected form of a vaccine. And apparently Gardasil is the first vaccine found to be contaminated by genetically engineered DNA. So it's a concern. And there have also been foreign DNA fragments discovered in post-mortem samples from young ladies who died after getting the Gardasil vaccine.
When you say contaminated, you're saying that it was not supposedly intentionally there, right?
Well, according to this article, Merck's patient product insert originally stated that there were no viral was no viral DNA in the vaccine, but after viral DNA was discovered by an independent lab, that statement mysteriously disappeared.
You mean in Syria, they didn't have any chemical weapons, but now they're going to let the UN go in and supervise the... I'm just making an analogy there.
Oh, I thought there was a news break. Chemical weapons turned out to be Gardasil vaccines, which is even worse.
No. I'm just making... I mean, they're saying that it was not... What I'm saying is it's not supposed to be there. It's contaminated means it wasn't intentionally put there, right? And now if the statement mysteriously disappears to say that there was no viral DNA in the vaccine, meaning that there was. And maybe
well,
it was intentional. I mean, I don't want to speculate there.
Well, certainly,
but,
certainly it's implied.
Play with the words. Yeah, it is implied.
Because what the article says is that SaneVax Incorporated believes that FDA and Merck should have tested, evaluated, and quantified the risk before the vaccine was even approved. But apparently didn't do that.
How hard is it to test these sample lots and determine whether there would be these recombinant DNAs in that? I mean, is that something that they have to specifically look for, or will it show up in a spectrometer or whatever kind of analysis that they do?
Yeah, I don't have any information about the details about how that works. But here's a quote from a Dr. Lee, a pathologist, the medical staff of Milford Hospital in Connecticut. He says, the finding of these foreign DNA fragments in post-mortem samples 6 months after vaccination indicates that some of this residual DNA fragments from the viral gene may have been protected from degradation in the form of DNA aluminum complexes. And so, or via integration into the human genome. You know, why would this still be there? And what does, because in other words, it's not supposed to be there 6 months later. It's still there. Why is it there? And maybe even more importantly, what are the implications? Does that have something to do with why some of these women died from the vaccine? And
right.
If it
changes your DNA, the human genome, and these are people in reproductive age, they will transfer that to their offspring, and they will change the DNA, the code, the genetics.
Yeah, potentially. And just to go a step further in this quote from Dr. Lee, undegraded viral and plasmid DNA fragments are known to activate macrophages, causing them to release tumor necrosis factor. Now, if you're not medical like I'm not, this may not make a whole lot of sense to you, but let me get to the end of the sentence here, which he says this tumor necrosis factor is a myocardial depressant. And here's the clincher here that we can all understand because it's in more straightforward English here, which can induce lethal shock in animals and humans. Mm-hmm. In other words, this undegraded viral DNA can kill you. Let's just put it in kind of blunt, straightforward terms. This is
right, because
quite disturbing. And they didn't.
They're saying, yeah.
And they should have been studying this before they released the vaccine, is what SaneVax is saying. But go ahead, Debbie.
Right. So they activate the macrophage, which is your defense system, the way that your body works to surround foreign matter and encapsulate it and dispose of it and get it out of the body. So you're activating this process within your body, causing them to release tumor necrosis factor, meaning it's going to create a tumor. Because the body is trying to create a little cyst or a barrier, or it's enclosing something that is foreign in the body, and that's how you're growing these tumors. And unfortunately, aluminum is a hot topic in the researchers' lab in medical news because it can cause so much neurological damage to the body. You'd have to read up from Heidi Stevenson of Gaia Health, who writes so eloquently to the layperson's language about how all of this research can be translated into just general terms. And understand that vaccines, I would say a majority of vaccines have aluminum, and it goes into the body, and if it's being attached with this changed DNA, with these foreign DNA fragments, then we're all getting it potentially. We don't know, do we?
There are a lot of unknowns here, and the article goes on here. It says if the Gardasil vaccinated donate blood, then there's a mm-hmm. list of unanswered questions that may apply to both the donors and the recipients. Is the aluminum-bound recombinant, the genetically modified HPV DNA, is it a new chemical compound with untested toxicity? It certainly is implied by what the article says elsewhere. Does binding with the aluminum prolong the survival of the recombinant HPV DNA in the bloodstream? Certainly appears to be a possibility here. And if this attaches to aluminum adjuvant, if that enters a person's blood, how long will it stay there? What autoimmune-related disorders mm-hmm. could result from this? What genetic changes could occur from this, as you were talking about? I mean, just all
right.
kinds of unanswered questions here, and not trivial.
So the question is,
should we be
releasing these kinds of elements, drugs, vaccines, chemicals, DNA, GMO, into the environment, letting open Pandora's box and never being able to put it back in, into the environment without complete and thorough testing? And the same thing with these vaccines. Can we utilize them and inject them into human, I want to say guinea pigs, human victims or human children or adults, and not really have complete data about short and long term effects? As we know, aluminum is highly related to Alzheimer's. The increase in Alzheimer's is really exponentially increased. So these are questions, if we don't have them answered before we let this loose into the medical world, where is the ethics in that? I'm going to have to get an ethics lawyer. I know an ethics lawyer who can come on and be our guest.
That would be great. So I'll just read the conclusion in the article, and we'll see if we can push on to one or two more issues here before we run out of time. But this article concludes, it's the responsibility of health authorities to present evidence that blood donation from Gardasil Gardasil vaccinated is safe for the recipients. If the authorities do not do this, they may well have blood on their hands, possibly a tragic pun, as the article itself says. I don't want to play both sides too much here. You can't test for everything, and especially if you have something that you're looking at in relatively small numbers of people that then gets distributed to millions and millions of people. So in that sense, it's impossible for widely distributed drugs or vaccines to not ultimately be, to one degree or another, a test at the point that you release it to the general public and distribute it or administer it to millions and millions of people. So there's always going to be things that show up, or is always the possibility that things will show up when you give it to millions that you didn't see when you gave it to hundreds. But this sort of thing they're talking about here sounds to me like the sort of thing that should have fallen well within the scope of the original research before it was licensed in the first place. It's just really disturbing that somebody else finds this, but they should, if nothing else, upon finding this, they should immediately withdraw and stop manufacturing and distributing and administering the vaccines until they go back and do the research now that it's been brought to their attention. Of course, nothing like that happens, and we can, draw a number of conclusions from that. But let's push on to one or two more topics here, Debbie, because I tell you we're down to about just a little over 5 minutes here before we've got to go to another break and then turn the show over to you. Did you have any particular news stories or articles you wanted to get to? You want me to jump on the next one here in my list?
Yeah, you pick something.
Okay. Well, this is an article that comes from Mercola.com recently. The title says, Mounting Research Raises Red Flag for Universal Flu Vaccine. And I think I've seen a couple of different articles on this general issue here. And of course, the conventional view is that the best way to protect yourself against influenza is to get a seasonal flu shot. And Dr. Mercola says, this flies in the face of a multitude of studies showing that the flu vaccine fails to work for many people. He says there's a study that the 2012-2013 flu vaccine did contain a very good match to circulating strains, and that, of course, is not always the case. And yet the reported effectiveness of the vaccine was still only slightly over 60%. And that's kind of interesting because the Lancet had a study back in 2011 that claimed that flu vaccines were only about 60% effective. So there's been no change in the reported figures there, apparently. But the article goes on to talk about some research because there's been some, part of the problem with flu vaccines is this strain match problem. It takes several months to manufacture and develop or manufacture large numbers of flu vaccines, and so they have to guess in advance what's going to be the main circulating strain or strains, and that changes year to year, or certainly can change year to year. So there's a guess factor here. And they always say, well, even if it's not a good match, get the flu shot anyway because it'll protect you from the strains that are in there. Translation, Don't make our investment go bad on us just because we didn't guess the right strain. Buy our vaccine anyway. So, even though it doesn't work, please help us maintain our profit. But there have been some research efforts to move in a direction that would, if successful, come up with a universal flu vaccine, and then you wouldn't have to worry about matching strains from year to year. Well, if flu vaccines worked, the research doesn't support that.
How does the universal flu vaccine work again? Did you explain how that works?
I have talked about that with past articles. Don't have that on the tip of my tongue. If I spot it here in the article while I'm talking or while you're talking, I'll bring it up. It's certainly a good question. But the point I wanted to jump to here is that there's recent research on pigs where they're using whole killed flu viruses in their, which is has to do with the approach they're taking to develop this universal flu vaccine. And they found that with the piglets anyway, getting vaccinated against one strain of influenza raised the risk of severe infection with a related but different strain of influenza. And this is this idea is not a new one. During the swine flu pandemic, we had data in Canada and more than one place in Canada. They saw this in different provinces, where the people who had had the seasonal vaccine, flu vaccine, the year before the swine flu pandemic, had a significantly greater risk of contracting swine flu than people who hadn't. It looked like getting a flu vaccine could actually be counterproductive, at least in the second year. Even if it worked for you in the first year, it could get you sick with a different strain in the next year. So there's some serious concerns here, I guess, bottom line, about a wrench in the works, as it were, with regard to trying to come up with this idea of a universal flu vaccine. Of course, all this research is just silly to me, in the sense that they're spending who knows how many countless millions of dollars trying to develop all this, because if they're successful, they'll have a billion-dollar, you know, product on their hands. But from a point of view of health, I mean, for God's sake, just take a vitamin D supplement. It protects better than flu vaccines, and you don't have to spend millions of dollars developing it, and vitamin C supplements will not injure or kill you. And vitamin D also protects from some chronic diseases as well as acute diseases like influenza. So you get, you know, a lot of bonus there, and costs a lot less than vaccines. Certainly costs a lot less than the adverse effects of vaccines. But again, you know, this ultimately doesn't boil down to what's in the best interests of people in public. It's about what's going to make the pharmaceutical the most money, and if there's another agenda or agendas underneath that, it's about those as well. So, but I don't know. You have any thoughts on that, Debbie? We probably need to get to break again pretty soon here.
Oh, well, I will just tell you what Cindy Loveland from the Facebook said, because she's talking about this mandatory Colorado healthcare workers having forced vaccination, and that's probably the flu shot.
Mm-hmm.
So the problem with this, it's sort of like, oh, we're going to create this universal vaccine, which does or does not work. We really don't know, and it's probably 10 years in development down the line because of all the glitches that happens while you're doing it. And what does she say? Flu shots mandatory for hospital employees, Avera, Sanford, Rapid City, because of this herd immunity thing. She says the next time someone tells you the flu shot is safe, have them take a look at this report. Just how many of the 88 claims that were compensated by the vaccine court between May 16, 2013 and August 15, 2013, in the same year, were for flu vaccine. Over half were for flu vaccine. Those adverse events include Guillain-Barré syndrome, myelopathy, reticulopathy, significant aggravations of an underlying immunological, neurological, and genetic condition, psoriasis, psoriatic arthritis. I mean, it's a big list. Chronic inflammation, demyelinating polyneuropathy, skin rash, fatigue, scarring, brachial neuritis, shoulder injury related to vaccine administration, autoimmune demyelinating condition, bursitis, Bell's palsies, urticaria. I mean, the list, COPD, pulmonary conditions, meningitis, encephalitis, optic neuritis. I mean, the list goes on, and now you're trading one thing for another thing. if you give a flu vaccine and you end up with rheumatoid arthritis for the rest of your life, and I'll tell you, these things, chronic diseases, they ruin your life and everything that happens within your family and all your relationships, and it leads to divorce and all sorts of stuff. So take your pick.
And even if you get compensation, you can never compensate for those kinds of losses.
No.
You know,
I
don't want to be disabled just so I can get $1 million, you know, or $100,000 or whatever it would end up being. And that's if you're lucky enough to get in the system and out of it with compensation at all. Many people apply. In fact, about 3/4 of the people who apply for compensation in the Federal Vaccine Injury Compensation Program don't get anything. So your odds of getting compensation, even if that could make up for your chronic illness, the odds are against you just going into it. So,
mm-hmm.
Well, let's go to a break here. We'll come back with and turn it over to you, Debbie.
Yeah.
But folks, you're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with Homeopathy World Community Founder Debbie Bruck, Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips. We've got another half hour to go, and Debbie is going to talk to you about homeopathy for the last segment here. You don't want to miss this, folks. Debbie is very, very well informed and always has really helpful and insightful information to share with you, so stick around.
Hello, everyone. Proof here again. I want to let you know about our brand new sponsor, Silver Leaf Tea. Now, as you guys know that have listened to me for years, I am a tea aficionado. I have hundreds of different flavors and styles at my house, and Silver Leaf has exactly the kind of stuff that I look for. I love loose tea, great antioxidants. I just love the taste of it, and this Silver Leaf has black, they have green, they have white, they have organic. Great for hot tea and iced tea. Silver Leaf Tea, it's right on our website, freedomizerradio.com. And check it out and order it. Silver Leaf Tea. Hello again, Freedomist. Proof is here, and I want to talk to you about a brand new soda maker called SodaStream. Now, the Proof House has had SodaStream for about a year, and we love the thing. We use it quite often. With SodaStream, you can have fresh-made soda in seconds. One of the big things we like about it is that there's no high fructose corn syrup and no aspartame. There's over 60 flavors, or you can create your own. Not just sodas, they also have iced teas and energy drinks. Here at the Proof House, we make egg cream sodas all the time. Some other facts to consider here, there's no electricity, no more wasted bottles and cans, and the most important thing is that it tastes great. Keep in mind, too, this is a perfect family present for Christmas, or, hey, just surprise the family with something great. Also, for a limited time, there's free shipping, so go to freedomizerradio.com and look for the SodaStream link, and I hope you check out the product. That's SodaStream right on freedomizerradio.com.
Hey, it's Red from the Red Pill Show. Are you trying to wake up? Are you trying to wake some of your family members and friends up? Are you hearing,
I don't want to talk about it. I got my own problems.
Or, oh, hey, man, dude, I don't want to hear that. I just, I got a job and I got to feed my family. Well, tune in on Sunday nights from 8 p.m. till 9:30 p.m. Central Standard Time, and we'll try to wake them up. Remember, it's everything and anything against the New World Order here on FreedomizerRadio.com.
Join me, Valerie Ann, on the Truth Exposition Show at Freedomizer Radio in exposing the truth about FEMA camps, drone surveillance, martial law, the New World Order, our threatened freedoms and civil liberties, and for weekly news and current events. Mainstream media continues with its lies and deceit to fulfill the agenda of the New World Order. So please join me in exposing the truth, along with the lies and the deceptions that are being fed to the American people. The people of the United States have a voice. and your voice will be heard through Freedomizer Radio.
Okay, we're back. Debbie, I'm going to turn it the show over to you. Take it away.
Thank you very much, and I hope everybody out there is having a great I'm going to be talking about – here, I'm back again. I'm going to be talking about a couple of different items, but I do want to let you know that if you go to freedomizerradio.com, there are at least 35 different hosts and numerous shows – LibertyLisa.com, Critical Immunity, The Red Pill Show, Ancient of Days, Ron's Media Matrix, See the Power in You, that's Cheryl, and The Panda Report, Barefoot Bushcraft Radio, and bunches of other shows. And you have an opportunity to come in and hear alternative news, and there's a live chat on the right-hand side, and you're going to have to go into something else besides Safari because that does not work. That browser does not work properly. So you're going to use Explorer or Chrome or another browser that the chat will actually work. You click it and sign in and start talking. Tell us what you think. And if you have any comments or questions, I'm in there now, and I will take a look at it and just speak live over the air. Or you can always call in to 347-324-3704 on your phone or via clicking that blue Skype button. So today I'm going to be talking about a couple things. I started yesterday. I have a show on Blog Talk Radio, Homeopathy World Community, once a month with Dr. Christina Chambreau, doctor of veterinary medicine, and we talked about vaccinations and rabies vaccine and what the law requires and adverse effects and how to prepare your animal and yourself for a vaccine and what to do about after effects. We discussed that pretty thoroughly. So if you want, you can listen to the archive on Homeopathy World Community, Blog Talk Radio, the Wednesday show. Then the second hour of that show, I talked all about commemorating and healing from the September 2001 9/11. And it's many years down the line now, and still people, this is an embedded memory in our cellular structure. It's part of humanity. It has changed the way we think about things. It has changed the way we view terrorists, terrorism, safety, security, and what that means for each of us as individuals, families, and communities, and countries. And you can see how what has happened over the past over a decade has changed the way we have responded to a leader telling us that we need to go and bomb another country without the will of the people, without the desire to go into a war that has so many unknowns. And I really discussed a great deal about that issue. I discussed what an anniversary is, all kinds of anniversaries, and how it is a stress no matter what it is, whether it's a wedding or a birthday or a tragic event. And also we have a collective consciousness about this particular event. The other thing I talked about is making this day holy and bringing our spirit into it, our prayers for a better future. And we do that when we go to congregations and gather together in groups and communities. And we also mourn together and how you can do that. One of these days I'm going to talk quite a bit about forgiveness because I think forgiveness is a huge component of healing the mind, body, and the spirit, the mind, body, and the soul, having forgiveness for others, for yourself, for things that we have done in the past. And then I talked a great deal about healing different kinds of traumas using homeopathy and what happens when there is an incident, any type of incident that is a trauma to the body, or to the emotions, or to the mental sphere, or the spiritual sphere of the human being. Also, I would imagine, to animals, because we have animals, and I've done numerous shows with Dr. Christina Chambreau on Blog Talk Radio in the past about the dogs that are used to go into war and like be a cover for stepping on bombs and things, and how they use their sense of heightened sense of smell to be like the nose and the eyes of their military companions, and how it is that they can deal with the shocks of these kinds of military attacks that happen. So yes, animals and humans both have stresses that can cause them to have fear from noise or different kinds of odors, or a person coming near to touch them and they will withdraw. Those are different kinds of responses, PTSD, post-traumatic stress syndrome. And we also have other kinds of shocks, just generally losses, loss of financial stability in the government, in our homes. We had the bankruptcy in America. We have people who are homeless. We have veterans who are homeless. All of these things are stressors, and homeopathically, we can use them to give some boost in the person's energy so they form coping mechanisms and maybe are able to deal on a physical, emotional, mental level with the losses that they have had in the past. And I listed many, many remedies yesterday in that show and went through them in quite a bit of detail. I will tell you right now, I left off about with the one about our nation is being built upon pride and justice. And the American way, I said, you know, we think of America, Superman, the police of the world, and all these things. And these issues and themes are being brought up even today, with what we're going to do militarily going forward. So I feel that what has happened is we have a loss of innocence. We are not naive. We are not giving away our power. We are not giving away our responsibility to make a determination and to speak up. I think that back then, I think, and this is my own personal belief, that America was kind of in a slump and apathetic, and they did not take a stand, and they did not. Maybe it's because the internet has changed so radically that we have all of these ability to click on a petition, to call your congressman, your representative, your senator. You can do so much today that at the click of your fingertips, you know, on your cell phone, on your mobile device, you can rapidly spread information from one person to the next until it does go viral. And this is part of it. And we want this information about homeopathy as self-empowering. Everybody should have a little remedy, emergency remedy kit at home, so that they can be the first aid, the emergency, in any emergency. This is the first step while you're calling 911 or getting somebody in an ambulance to the hospital if that is the case, but at least you have something that you can do, and learn all the other things that you can do, Reiki and flower essences and healing prayer and healing touch and deep breathing and positive affirmations and EFT. We have such a great resource of self-healing tools that we have to get to be widespreadly known to people. So here we have, I talked about this yesterday, a delusion that a person might imagine that they are going to be attacked. I mean, in essence, let's say the veteran comes home and they're not in the situation of being on and the front line on in war, but they're home and they're in their family, and then a memory comes up in them and they feel like they're going to be attacked, or they're sleeping and a dream comes up and they relive the past. And we have at least 29 remedies that will address this issue of the delusion, it's called, the imagination, that a person feels like they are going to be attacked. And again, I did talk about them. A lot of them are in the Anacardium, the plant family, Arnicardaceae, which people know as mango or poison ivy or poison oak. And that is something that they feel. And they might also obviously have skin symptoms that would help you to determine that is the remedy. Remember, whatever I say here is purely entertainment, educational, informative. If you have a medical problem or a legal issue, you need to contact your own personal health care worker or your legal advisor. And I'm going to just check on how much time we have. And I really appreciate all those folks who are in the Freedomizer Radio or Homeopathy World Community Radio listening today and sharing this information with your friends. Has the integrity of this country disintegrated? Do more people feel that they can no longer stand for injustices in the world? And there are 76 remedies for persons who feel this way, that there has been an injustice. Many of the emotional reactions to such a situation will include feeling shamed, feeling like you're offended, feeling like you've been accused, and then as a reaction, as a response, being defiant, or this can happen. And at the personal level, it can happen at a grand level of the political level of like the president, you know, he's saving face by every single thing that he is trying to say in terms of this political posturing and political maneuvering. So one of those 76 remedies may be a positive for him. A desire to protect yourself and a desire to protect others. And we can look this up also in the homeopathic Materia Medica, the book of like the encyclopedia of drugs, and the repertory, the list of rubrics, the list of symptoms that list what remedies will assist in each of those symptoms. So, you know, a mother does want to protect their child. A father wants to be a provider for their family and protect them from any ill health or attack that is potentially going to come in. And this is the kind of mindset that we have today about our freedoms and our independence. And I mentioned yesterday the three top remedies for the delusion for the person who feels like they have no defense and they have no shield of protection. One is the remedy carcinosum. It is a deep-acting nosode, and it is for those folks who feel like they have to be perfect, perfect in every single thing that they do. Otherwise, things are going to get out of control and into a state of chaos. The next remedy is peregrine falcon. You can imagine this regal bird and what they do to survive in the wild and how they are domesticated, attached to their human partner, and what that means to be free from the bond of chains. And then we have another lesser-known remedy called sea anemone. And I would have to do some research about that. I think I have a book of the proofing and look that up someday and tell you a little bit more about it. I talked yesterday also about who is the real enemy and this feeling of being attacked or pursued, and there are remedies for that. Religious affections, you know, we can really start praying for our life. And even atheists, they say they're an atheist and then they get into a life and death situation. All of a sudden they're praying. So you can see how a bomb or an airplane crash or any kind of accident would turn a person into perhaps a little bit over the edge of what we call a religious affection. And there are a list of remedies for that as well mentioned yesterday. What about fear of impending evil?
Yeah, we talk a lot about that on Freedomizer Radio. Who are the good guys? Who are the bad guys? What are ethical, moral values and what people do and what we might call evil? And there are lots of homeopathic remedies that address this feeling that the mind is afraid of evil and simply something bad will happen, something evil will happen. Evil will happen to you. And so if you find yourself constantly praying or you have become exceptionally spiritual, I think it's wonderful to be connected to God, and that is our purpose in this world is to become connected to the Creator and to bring his face, his energy, and all of his goodness into the earth to repair the earth, to repair the splits and disconnects that we have among each other, among nations. And so this spirit, if it goes over the edge and you're just like praying constantly, you know that you've kind of lost your grounding, because you have to be able to deal with everyday situations. And I think I'm going to have to continue this discussion about shock and fear and what happens, reactions, and more about homeopathic remedies that deal with it, because I wanted to bring up another issue today. And that issue is something that somebody shared with me, and it's all about sharing. It's called a campaign called Rethink 911. And I can't tell you whether it's true, whether it's false, but there was a survey done that one out of two, I think it is, people in the survey in the United States, Americans, feel that 9/11, they were not told the truth about 9/11. And I wanted to, that website is rethink911.org, rethink911.org. And you can get all the information there that this new poll finds. One in two Americans have doubts about the government account, what we have been told about 9/11, which means we feel betrayed. We feel that loss of innocence. And a little bit more about that, they have some pretty good videos with engineers and scientists who are telling you how they have done an analysis of the collapse of the buildings, and that not very many people know about the third tower that fell, you think about just the two towers, the twin towers, but there is a third tower, and an examination on the screen, the filming of that collapse, and what all the analysis, the engineering, the physics, and the actual mechanical way that it collapsed. 46% suspect controlled demolition of that World Trade Center Building 7 after viewing the footage of the collapse. On the 12th anniversary of 9/11, a new national survey, polling, it was YouGov. That's what I just told you. So you can do an investigation of that. Among the poll findings, 38% of the Americans have some doubts about the official account, 911, and 10% do not believe it at all, and 12% are unsure. And I am going to ask you if you have any comments or questions for us, for Alan Phillips or myself, that you would like us to address on the air. We would be really, really happy to do that. We like to have callers come in or send us a message, send us an email. You can reach me at homeopathyworldcommunity.com. At gmail.com. And Alan, where is Alan? You can vaccine rights attorney, and he is at attorney@vaccinerights.com. You can find him at pandemicresponseproject.com as well. And I'm going to
send you off with some positive thoughts. I think that any time in your day that you notice that you're feeling tense or tight in the back of your neck or in your shoulders or collar, that you just take a great big breath in and let it out. You might even just automatically close your eyes, get in touch with what your heart is saying to you, what your mind is saying to you, whether you have shallow breathing. And just notice, you don't have to do anything at all. Just notice your breathing. Notice that if there's any tension around your face and your mouth, your cheeks and your eyes. And when you do that, your body will relax. Your body will relax. And with each in-breath, you're bringing in good positive affirmations, and you're exhaling the negative, the toxic, what doesn't belong there, what you don't need. Tell yourself that you love yourself and you're here on the planet to do good things to help your fellow man. And I would like to invite you again to each Monday on the Health Inn, Nissan Communications. We're going to have fabulous speakers Monday about full spectrum sunlight and how that is connected to our overall health and illness or disease in adults and children, seasonal affective disorder. And also the following week, the 23rd of September, we're going to have the expert on herd immunity. And we will see you back here Thursday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time with Alan Phillips and Debbie Brooke.
Freedomizer radio host Alan Phillips. My vaccine exemption ebook can help you avoid the mistakes that have cost others their exemption rights. Get the authoritative guide to vaccine legal exemptions, an ebook available at freedomizerradio.com and vaccinerights.com.
Let freedom ring throughout the land.
Get ready for the epic new documentary adventure ride of your life. Shades, the motion picture. A view into the globalist domain. Annabella's and Burma's film.
Nothing in this world works the way you think it does. Nothing. Governments do not operate the way you think they do. Banks do not do what you think they do. The police department is not here for what you think it is. Nothing in your world works the way you think it does.
The new world government has been identified, and they thought they had cloned the world economy to bring in a worldwide police state, but instead, it's going to bring them down.
You have to stand up. Speak up. Speak out.
Shade the motion picture. Order your copy of the DVD today at shadethemotionpicture.com.
Want to spread awareness to your neighbors, family, and friends about what is going on in our country today? It may be things you already know, like the large number of FEMA camps spread around this country to lock up citizens like you and me. What legislators are doing to strip states and people of their sovereign rights. Or legislation giving states the power
to
force vaccinate under a declared state of emergency.
And your rights in the U.S. with co-hosts Alan Phillips and Debbie Brooke. On Homeopathy World Community Radio, remember to educate, before you vaccinate.
Allow our souls to